No.
She might be, if I took it, she might be like, he doesn't need me anymore. He can mention it. I don't want to make her feel bad. Okay, let's begin. Parshas Chayei Sara. Is there a shas on that shelf? No. I just need, I'm sorry. I'm pausing. Okay, yeah, okay, we're back. I'm sorry about that. Okay, we have a lot of nice different Torah in this week's parasha between Sefer Bereishis is just replete with many nuggets and things we can learn from. So without further ado, I guess let's just begin. The beginning of the parasha, Chayei Sara, of course, is the death of Sara. Iran, it's called Chayei Sara, the life of Sara. But it starts with the death of Sarah. That happens, by the way, also in Parshas Vayechi. Parshas Vayechi speaks about the death of Yaakov. I guess when we get to Parshas Vayechi, remind me then, and we'll give a quick idea, a nice idea about why both the death of Sarah and Yaakov, and the death of Tzadikim in general, is referred to as Vayechi, as life. We'll speak about it then. Okay, Parshas Kaisar begins with the death of Avram, as we said, and Rashi brings down famously. Sarah, thank you. Good, you guys are paying attention. And Rashi brings down famously that why is it that Sarah, right? Why did Sarah die over here? Why is it that Sarah died over here? So, Rashi says that it was because the Satan came to Sarah and he told her, listen, I don't mean to get anyone in trouble, but you know where your husband is? And she said, where is my husband? Well, you know, it's not a big deal, really. He just took your son to slaughter him. And at that point, when she heard that, her neshama left her body and she died. That is what Rashi says, quoting from the Medrash Tanchuma. Now, the question, of course, is the following. The Satan is not the Malach HaMavos. The Satan is a person who is an entity who's made to slow us down and prevent us, create obstacles in our way in doing mitzvahs. The Satan is not meant to kill people. The killing agent, if you will, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appoints, is the Malach HaMavos. So why is it that the Satan over here comes to kill Sarah? What exactly is going on? Okay. So, I believe I saw it in Nesiva Shalom a few years ago. I think it's Nesiva Shalom, but I can't be 100% certain. He says the following. He says, the Satan over here was trying to create an obstacle to a mitzvah. What was the mitzvah? The mitzvah was the Akedah. Avraham Avinu was commanded to do the Akedah, to take Yitzchak to Har Moriah and Aleu Shem Lola, and there he was meant to serve as a korban. Now, doing the mitzvah is part one of it. However, part two of it is also feeling good and accomplished about the fact that you've done the mitzvah, not regretting Chas V'Shalom that you've done the mitzvah. So, if after you've done the mitzvah, you say to yourself, "Oh man, what a waste of time. Oh man, I wish I would have done. I wish I would not have done that." Then the mitzvah is discounted, right? It's taken away. You've lost credit for the mitzvah. It's possible to do a mitzvah and then lose it. Boom. So what happened over here? The Satan wanted to make Avraham regret the fact that he did the mitzvah of the Akedah. So what did he do? He went and he told Sarah about the Akedah. At that point, it happened to have been that Sarah's years came to an end, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said so. And so her neshama left this world. And at that point, Avraham Avinu could have said, you know what? That just wasn't worth it. Trying to do God's mitzvah, and then look at what happened. Look at what happened. I do God's bidding, and then my wife dies. And he could have regretted it. And because he could have regretted it, had he regretted it, it would have undermined the entire Akedah. And that's why the Satan did it. What does the Torah tell us? Vayavo Avram lispod l'Sarah v'liv kosa, to mourn for Sarah and to cry for Sarah. Did anyone see in the Torah Shnai Mikra yet? How does it say v'liv kosa over there? Cry for her with a little chaf. It just has a little chaf inside the liv kosa. Why the little chaf? Chazal tell us he didn't cry too much. Right.
Is that
okay? No, too late. right? It could be its own board, but it's he cried for her, but with a little chaf in the word v'liv kosa and chaf gimel pasuk beis. Why? To teach us that he only cried a little. Why is it significant that he only cried a little? To highlight exactly this point, he cried, right, for the loss of his wife. He cried for the loss of Sarah, the partner that he had for the past number of years, many number of years, in bringing people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he did not cry for the fact that she died post the Akedah. He did not allow himself to cry too much because he did not want it to undermine the Nisayon of the Akedah. The Maisa is important, but the attitude that we have towards the Maisa, the acts, the mitzvahs that we do both pre and post is significant as well. You should not regret doing the right thing, doing mitzvahs, and you should feel good about that. You should feel good about yourself if you do. In fact, we say in davening, and this will end with this first word, we say in davening, Hatzel Satan, we say this at Marv, Milfaneinu, make sure that the Satan doesn't come in front of me. But it also says, Ume'achareinu. What does that mean, from behind me? The Satan shouldn't come from behind me. It means post the mitzvah, after I've already done it, he shouldn't come from behind and try to make me regret it. That's Hatzel Satan Milfaneinu Ume'achareinu, and that's the first... That's the leaf kosa, just a little bit of crying, and that is why the sudden over here, not the Malach HaMavis, was the person that was dispatched to take away Sarah's neshama. Okay, you have a question?
Yeah, she's saying just the sudden was not even there while Sarah died, just to try and.
No, he was. He did. He was fully. He would. He did want to kill her. Meaning, but not as a Malach HaMavis. It was her time. 127 years passed. The Malach HaMavis is on his way to go ahead and claim her life. Says the son, you know what? Let me take care of this one. I wanna take this one. But that's not your job. Well, actually, this time it is. Because I'm. Yeah.
Who is the source that said that the Satan created obstacles with Siva Shalom?
The sudden in general is not just Nesiva Shalom. Nesiva Shalom raises the question, but the sudden in general is that entity which is there to create obstacles. The Yetzer Hara, the sudden, they're there to create obstacles for us when we're about to do, when we want to do good things. You know, when you're waking up in the morning and it's, whatever it is, depending on Kol HaBoker or Shachas, but let's say tomorrow morning, Friday morning, that means at 8 o'clock, and when it's 7:50 and you're saying to yourself, oh, but it's raining and it's cold outside and I want to stay in bed, that's what the sudden does. That's what the Yetzer Hara does. They try to create obstacles to make you think that your bed is nice and fuzzy and warm and cozy. Not fuzzy, cozy. Right? That's the sudden. But he doesn't normally go ahead and kill people. That's the Malach HaMavis. Okay. In Pirkei Avos, in Perek Hey, Mishnah Gimel, it says, Asara Nisyonos Nitnasa Avraham Avinu Alav Shalom. There were 10 trials, 10 tests that Avraham Avinu was tried, the Amad Bechulam, and he withstood all of them. So what are those 10 tests? We generally assume that the first one was being thrown into the furnace by Nimrod, and the last one is the Akedah. The pinnacle of all the tests was the Akedah. And it makes sense. Tests are supposed to be gradually harder and more difficult. You start out, you pass the hard test, and then you become better and smarter for it, so now you need a harder test. And then you become better and smarter for it, now you need a harder test. So each test was progressively harder, always challenging Avraham to go to the next level. And so it makes sense that obviously the culmination of those tests was the Akedah. But if you look at the Rabbeinu Yonah, on Pirkei Avos, and the Asar and the Sionos, he lists them all. And the Rabbeinu Yonah says that the 10th test, there's no Rabbeinu Yonah in this one, it's just, oh, there is, that's the wrong. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that the 10th test was not the Akedah. Can anyone guess what the 10th test was? Not the Akedah. Can anyone guess what the 10th test was? That's Saradayim Kusay, that's very good. Burying her, trying to go ahead and need to find the burial plot. Asar Nisyonis, this is the Avraham Avinu, Avraham B'chulan, Cesar Ben Yonah, Asiri, Kvurat Sarah. Right? The tenth one was Kfura Sara. Why? Because it said at the beginning, Kumi Telech Barat Slarakalachi Lechad Nena, the whole land is yours. And then the whole land is yours, but what? Oh, it's not, by the way, you got to buy the grave. So that was the tenth test. Now, that was the tenth test. Now, the problem with that is, I just described to you, is that each test was supposed to get progressively harder and harder. So if each test is supposed to get progressively harder and harder, you would imagine that after the Akedah, there would be nothing harder. I mean, it's a little bit annoying to have to deal with Ephraim and Achiti and tell them, this, I want to buy it. No, I don't know. This, too, all right, 400 tests. It's annoying, but that's harder than being asked to sacrifice your son. So what's Pshat? So two answers, two potential answers. All right, so this will be two words, but on the same question. Answer number one is the following. My friend brings this one. That sometimes when the person accomplishes great feats, the natural tendency afterwards, when you're feeling accomplished, is, I think I need a rest. Or not I think I need, but rather I think I deserve a rest. Right? What is the first thing that you do after you took the SATs? Or what is the first thing that you did the last day of school? You say, I'm going to treat myself to a little bit of something. You know, I'm going to buy myself a pie of pizza and I'm going to, whatever, I don't know what. Yeah, but I'm going to turn on the TV and just spend the next 24 hours in front of it. Whatever it may be. Right? You want to rest, relax, I deserve. And that's not just right. Any time we accomplish a difficult task, we've been through a lot. We want to, our natural tendency is to want to rest. Avram too, after accomplishing such a difficult test, right, the Akedah, the natural tendency should have been to want to, alright, done. Now let me just relax and enjoy my retirement, you know. I've worked hard for, normally people say, I've worked hard for 65, 67 years. In Avraham Avinu's case, it was, I've worked hard for, depending on how old Yitzchak was at the time of the Akedah, I've worked hard for over 100 years. I've accomplished a lot. I think it's time to retire a little bit. And that's natural, and it's very, very difficult to overcome it. The temptation is, once we've accomplished, to go out on top and just stop. Rest on your laurels. And that was what Avraham Avinu had to overcome. Suddenly when he was told, when he thought he would look forward to a golden years of retirement, suddenly he's like, this is not exactly like I envisioned it. I thought God would let me have some rest and relaxation. It was possible to undo the entire life with this last little, although it seems tiny, but when you're looking forward to retirement, and here you have a chance to retire, and suddenly God throws another, even though it seems like just a little task, it can undo the entire package. And that was the test that Avraham Avinu passed according to the Rabbeinu Yonah. That's answer number one. Answer number two, offered by the similar. Answer number two, offered by the Michta Meliyahu, is the following. Sometimes you can be, all right, sometimes you can lose your cool when you're put in a difficult situation. If let's say you're having a hard day, the classic example is, let's say you're in the supermarket and suddenly the cashier begins to yell at you. So you say to the cashier, I'm sorry, did I do something wrong? And it's just, no, just having a bad day, you know. Just some bad news. When we're having bad days, right, I'm having a hard day, then it's very hard for us to interact with people. We shut down, we want to be with ourselves, and we push aside everything else. Right? Avraham Avinu, by all stretches of the imagination, had a bad day. Right? Told to sacrifice his son, told his wife died. Right? And despite all that, the courtesy and the patience that he displays in the trial of bearing Sarah, that was difficult. Right? To be patient, to be kind, to be tolerant of this charade that's being put on by the Bnei Chet and by Ephron, that was a difficult task. And to be able to walk out of that with a smile and not, you know, not just throw out the excuse I've had a hard day and snap at people. That too is an amazing test, right? It's one that we fail all the time. And oftentimes we are quick to snap, we're quick to judge, we're quick to just retreat because we've had hard days, whatever, and that could be legitimate to have a hard day. But the question is, just because you've had a hard day doesn't mean that you're supposed to inflict hard days on everyone else. Right? Fiddler on the Roof, anyone see Fiddler on the Roof? So in the play Fiddler on the Roof, when they introduce all the characters at the beginning, you know, there's the Yenta, the Shadchan, there's the Rebbe, there is Muttel the tailor. Well, Muttel is actually not introduced in the, and then there is Nachum the beggar, I think.
Nachum,
it is Nachum, right? It's Nachum the beggar. So Nachum the beggar comes and says, alms for the poor. Do you have any tzedakah? And the guy gives him a kopek. He says, a kopek? One kopek? Last week you gave me two kopeks. So he says, well, Nachum, I had a bad week. So Nachum the beggar says to him, well, just because you had a bad week, does that mean that I have to have a bad week? Right? What? Right. Does that mean I have to suffer? No, I think in my version it's, does that mean I have to have a bad week? But, okay. Either way. So, I'll try to check the gear set that I have at home. Anyway, the point is that's exactly the point. Just because you have a bad day doesn't give you the right to inflict bad days on everyone else. Just because you had a bad week, does that mean that I have to have a bad week? Okay. Very good. So that's board number 2 and 3. Let's go on a little. Okay. I guess let's discuss this a little bit more. Oh, there is a story, a nice story that's told about this past idea that I just told you about putting on a good face for everyone despite the hardships. There's a great book out there. It's called From Jerusalem, His Word. It's a book about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and his life and all that he accomplished. Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that's all. So in that book, it was written by one of his Talmidim, Chanoch Teller, who's a master storyteller. So he writes that when Shlomo Zalman's wife was in the hospital, she was suffering and she passed away. And Shlomo Zalman Orbach was with her in those last few moments as she passed away. And after he left the room and he was walking back towards his home to get ready for the kvura and for the shiva, so he bumped into one of his talmidim that were in the hospital at the same time. And the talmid was there for his wife who had just given birth. And when he saw his Rebbe, he was all so excited. He didn't think, oh, what's my Rebbe doing in the hospital? He was just so excited. Oh, my lucky. Me, yeah, my Rebbe's here. I get to tell him the news right away. He runs up to his Rebbe and says, Rebbe, you won't believe what just happened. Such good news. My wife and I just had a baby. And Shlomo Zalman looks wide smile and says, Mazel Tov, Tiskel, I don't know if it was a boy or a girl, Tiskel Agadla, the Torah, the Chupa, the Masim Toivim, only good things. And he gives him this big radiant smile. He was famous for his smile. Really, just enjoy. And they kept on going. So, the student, obviously, within a few hours, found out why Shlomo Zalman Orbach was in the hospital. And then they realized, wow, that is, how many of us would be able to be in that situation of our wife just having passed? Right? We would, without breaking down, but even to be able to put on a smile, that's an amazing thing. That only a gadol like Shlomo Zalman Orbach could pull off, something we should strive for to hopefully be able to do as well. Okay, let's should we stick with the Bnei Ched and Ephraim?
Yeah,
let's give one more word about the Bnei Ched and Ephraim. Why not? This is free flowing ideas. Like I said, I don't really have a chance as much as I would have liked. Okay, so what's the whole back and forth? Pasuk Dalet, Avram Avinu comes and he says, Gerbet Tashav Anachim Achem, listen, I'm one of you. Yeram. Tnuli Achuzas Keverim Achem, please give me a burial plot. Vayanu Bnei Cheses Avram Lemor, Bnei Ches answer him, listen, Nesil, Imata Betochenu, you're one of the best, you're a parliament member, you're a religious figure, you're an inspiration to us all. B'mivchar kvarenu kvoris mitechein, the best of our graves, ish mimenos kivro lo yichle mimcha, Mimecha, I'm sorry, nobody will hold back. You can have any grave you want, it's yours. On the house. Right? And then Abraham says, listen, if you can, please show me Ephraim ben Sochar. I'd like to speak to him. Now, why does he need to speak to Ephraim ben Sochar? They just offered him every single grave, including Ephraim ben Sochar's. He can go wherever he wants and bury. So why does he insist on Tiguli Ephraim ben Sochar? Right? Why did he insist on the one-on-one interaction with Ephraim ben Sochar? Why did he not just go? So the Chofetz Chaim points out the following truism about people. So sometimes when we're in a public setting and the cameras are rolling, if you will, then we try to be Mr. Nice Guy, put on a good show for the camera. Yeah, any one of us, happy to do it. Take whatever you want. They were in the public square. Everyone was there. Nobody wanted to be that guy that says, no, I don't want to give him my land. I don't want to just give it away for free. Right? And Avram was aware that sometimes you could just be playing for the cameras, playing to the crowds, to the galleries. So he said, you know what? I'd like to speak to Ephraim one-on-one privately. It's not so posh that when you're on your own and in private, you're as good as you are in public. Right. Sometimes, right, I say this to people. You know, the best. You come to Shacharis in the morning and you have a good Kriya Shema, you have a good Shmoneh Esrei. Sometimes it's because it's legitimately good, but sometimes you know you can't help but be aware that you're sitting in the crowd, and because you're sitting in the crowd, you kind of want to look good for the crowd, so you might be, right? But when you're saying Kriya Shema Alamita at night, and you're on your own, so how does that Kriya Shema Alamita look? Right? Is that as good as your as the one when you're in the crowd and you know people are watching you? And if you know somebody's watching you, what about? So sometimes when you're one on one, you're not as good as when you are when you're in front of people. Right. Avram Avinu was aware of that, and therefore he wanted to speak to Ephron one-on-one. But the lesson for us is that we really have to try to be, right? We have to try to be on our own as good as we are when we are surrounded by people. Okay, next word. I guess let's skip a little bit. Vavram, let's get to Perek Abdullah. Vavram Zaken Baba Yamin Vashem Barachet Avram Bakol. Avram was old, Baba Yamim, advanced in his days. Vashem Barachas Avram Bakol. God blessed him with everything. So what is Bakol? So Rashi over here points out that Bakol Begimatria is Ben. So he gave him a son. So, alright, and that's why the next few psukim, a lot of psukim, deal with finding a shidduch for the son for Yitzchak. That's a different midrash. So question is, though, if it was a son and it is natural that it should be a son, and that's why he then has to speak to Eliezer, go find a wife for my son, etc. So why wouldn't the pasuk just write Vashem Barachas Avraham? But then why did it have to write Bakol? Everything, you could have just written, if everything means son, just write son. God blessed him with a son. So what, Shasha? I believe Rav Moshe Feinstein says that as far as Avraham Avinu was concerned, the son, right, his son, Yitzchak, was everything. All of his energies, all of his effort was put into raising his son. That to him was the most important thing. Right? You guys are a little bit far away from being parents, but not all that far away. But that is a tremendous smile. When you view your children as everything, the be-all and end-all, and willing to sacrifice everything for them, which is what Avram was willing to do, that is the best type of parent that you can be. To live for your children as opposed to live selfishly for yourself. As far as Avraham Avinu was concerned, he was everything. Anyway, in the first part of the pasuk, it says, "Avraham Zaken Baba Yamim." So I don't have an English. Oh, I do have an English over here. How does that translate in English? Oh, you have it over there.
Well advanced in his years.
He was about. Is that what it says? No.
Yeah. In his years. Well advanced in his years.
Well advanced in his years. Avraham Zaken Baba Yamim. Right? Why can't it just say Avraham Zaken? Why do you need those extra words Baba Yamim? Also Baba Yamim, mind you, what's Yamim?
Days.
Why does it not say Shanim? Why does it say Yamim? What was that? Yeah, so what do we mean when we say Orach Yamim? Why don't we say Orach Shanim? What's Orach Yamim? Your days will be
full.
Full. Very good. So that's the notion. Sometimes, right? A person, right? Person, right, let's give the following mashal. I think the Magid Medubno gives this mashal. Person comes to his wife and he says, "We're rich." Right? Why are we rich? I saved up 100,000 coins. No, that's a different mashal. Take away that mashal. That is a good mashal, but for a different time. Now the point is that sometimes a person, here's what happens. Sometimes a person is told, "Listen, in 30 days from now, you have an assignment due." So what happens when you hear, "In 30 days from now, you have an assignment due"? If you're like me in high school, you say 30 days, it's plenty of time. So what do? You're like, "I'm not going to start it now. I'd rather go do something else now." So you do, and then 29 is plenty of time. And then you end up pushing it off. And then, before you know it, the night before, you say to yourself, "Uh-oh, I have an assignment due tomorrow. I'd better do it." Right? And you're upset at yourself. Now, let's say though, instead of saying 30 days, you would have said to yourself, "In a month." 1 month. Right? So 1 month, right, that number, that's not 30, that's one. Right? That unit of one makes it seem like it's a little bit closer. It's only a month away. Sometimes a person makes the mistake of saying to himself, you know, what's the difference? A person lives, you know, I don't know, I've never done the math. What's 120 times 365?
A lot.
A lot. Person lives, right? Person lives over 36,000 days. What's the difference? One day, I don't have to. Such a big deal. One day out of 36,000, I'm not at my best, you know. 2 days out of. And then if you're just looking it out, so many days. But if you say to yourself, you know, it's, you know, if you say to yourself, it's only six scores, right? The score is 20 years, right? Yeah, four score. Yeah, so it's only six scores. It's only, you know. So then there's a much more urgency to it, and then you do. Very few of us, though. Thank you. 43,800 days a person lives. You say that's 43,000. One day out of 43,000. What's the big deal, right? One, right? Times six, times 24, times 60. You know, for the answer, it's fine. We don't, right? 1 hour out of thousands, hundreds of thousands of hours. What's the big deal if I waste this hour away, right? But if you look at it as a smaller unit, then you're able to, right? Then you're able to accomplish more. Avraham Avinu, right, was aware that it was Yomim, but despite that, he never let a day go by where he did not take it to its fullest. Every day he was careful to do and act in a way that would make him and his maker proud. Every day was an opportunity, and he took advantage of that every day. Ba vayamim. Every day of his life counted, and he took advantage of it. I have a friend. This is solid advice for everyone, by the way. I have a friend who decided that he would not go to sleep until he would be able to list three things that he did well that day. Three things that he did that were worthy of note, mentioned, you know, not to share with other people, just with himself. You know, like, "Oh, wait a minute, I helped that old lady cross the street. Okay, that's one. You know, I save the cat from the tree. I took the cat down from the tree. Yeah, that's two. And you know, I gave a lollipop to a little child. That's three. Okay, now I can go to sleep. Those are obviously false examples. But what would happen was that at the end of the day, it would be hard for him to recap everything that he did, right? And it would annoy him because he wouldn't let himself go to sleep until he found three things. So he's like, this is ridiculous. I'm not getting to sleep. I have to find a different way to do it. I have to start to look for the things during the day as I'm doing them. And then when I go to sleep, I'll know them right away. So he started to look for things during the day. Be mindful of the fact that he needs three good things before he goes to sleep. And he said that it changed his life, you know. He can't describe the difference between his life, because the minute he was looking for three nice things to do every day, he was constantly looking for opportunities to do good things, noteworthy things, things that are good, things that are nice. And so therefore every single day of his life he finds that he, this was not an about Gava type of conversation, every day of his life he's finding that he's doing wonderful things, because that's the notion, that every day you should be doing good things. And that's my little advice to you. If you want to know how to do every day, then try to say to yourself, every day I want to have a list of 2, 3, 4, 5 things that I did that I can be proud of. Every day is significant. Don't minimize the power of a day. Okay, let's go on. Okay. So Yitzchak goes, Eliezer goes. We don't know it's Eliezer. He's always only referred to as Eved Avram, right? But he goes. Bumps into Rivka, and he says, listen, before he even bumps into Rivka, he says to Hashem, I need to know who is a suitable match. You know what's a suitable match? A woman who does chesed. And how will we test the chesed? If I ask for water and she says, listen, not just you, I'll give you, but even your camels, that's chesed. Right? I think we spoke about that last week. What is chesed? When you're looking to create, you're not just looking to fulfill the need. Right? It's not just your need. Fine, I'll have compassion on you. It's beyond that. She looks to create more opportunities by doing chesed even more. Oh, not just you. No, no, no. That's not enough for me. I want to give it to your camels as well. Anyway, so there's an interesting medrash. How did Eliezer know to test Rivka? Why did he decide to test Rivka? Anyone know? What happened when she went to the well? Good, excellent. The water came up to her. So he's like, you know what? That's a pretty good first sign. Let me put her to the test. The question is, how do we know that the water came up to her? Where did Chazal get this notion that the water came up to Rivka when she went down to the well? So I'll tell it to you right now. In Perek Avdalad, it says, Vatereda Aina, Pasuk Tazayin. She went down to the spring, Vatemalekada, and then she filled her jug. Then, the second time, when she goes to refill the jug for the camels, it says, Vatishav lechol gmalav. She drew water for all of the camels. So the first time, it didn't say that she drew water. It just says that she filled the jug. The second time, it said, she had to draw the water from the well. So from that Chazal learned, obviously the first time, the water, she did not have to draw the water, but rather the water came up to her. So the question is obvious. Why is it that the first time the water came up to her, and the second time she had to draw the water? Doesn't make sense. Let the water come up to her all the time. First time, right? It just came up to her. The second time she had to draw it. So what's pshat? So the Kedusha Slavi explains, it's brought down in Sefer Alekach Ve'Alibuv, Rav Avraham Shor, I believe he quoted from the Kedusha Levi. The Kedusha Levi explains the following. There's a few explanations. I think we'll only have time for one. But he has two beautiful explanations. He says the following. The first time, she was doing it for who?
The first time,
she was doing it for herself. Right? She had no clue that Eliezer would come and say, "Can I have some water?" So the first time, it was for herself. The second time that she did it though, who was she doing it for?
Eliezer.
Not even Eliezer. Eliezer already had some. She gave him from the first batch, but for his camels. The second time, it was a mitzvah. Right? Sometimes, oftentimes, right, when we're looking to do mitzvahs, it comes with a burden. It comes with effort. Right? It doesn't come easy. Right? When you're doing things for yourself, then they come easy. Yeah, because I want to do this. I'm happy to do this. But when you're doing it because, not because you want to do it, and not because you're, but rather because you're told to do it, or because it's a, right, which is a mitzvah. The mitzvah, by definition, something that you are told to do, a commandment. It becomes much harder. Right? When your parents, when you just surprise your parents by cleaning your room, it's easy, because that was your own idea. When your parents ask you to clean your room, and you do it, that's much harder, right? Because you know they've taken away the your free will, and you feel constrained, and you feel like you don't. That's so. The mitzvah is much harder to do. Right? That's why the second time she had to do eshav, she had to draw the water. But not only that. Right here, more la inyan. Oftentimes, when you first do something, when you're in a new environment. This is important for all of us. There's a certain excitement, and there's a certain flair, and there's a certain, you know, momentum and energy, and it's easy. But when you continue to remain in that place, then eventually it becomes harder and harder. The first day of school, piece of cake. Right? The first week of yeshiva, everyone's excited, it's new, the energy, you know, there's everything. Right, the novelty, but then the novelty wears off, right? And now here we are a month into Chorev Zman, and it's much harder. Right? The first time Rivka did it, easy. It was the beginning, but now continuing to do it, it becomes much, much harder. Right? It's, the Yetzer Hara is aware of that. The Yetzer Hara, right? It's natural tendency by all people. It's not a uniquely Jewish thing, right? We get excited at first, and then we lose our excitement. And when we lose our excitement, that is the danger zone. When we lose our excitement, that is when we're likely to either abandon it totally, right? Nah, forget it. I'm not cut out for this. Or we can overcome and then coast till the end. Right? The first time Rivka did it, there was excitement. It was right. It was easy. But then, as you continue to do it, there's a she'iva that's involved. There is a notion of having to draw water from the well. And that is more difficult. That is the lesson from Rivka's needing to draw the water the second time and not the first time. First time is easy. To continue to do it continuously and on a regular basis is hard. Okay, last idea, just a quick one. So he meets Rivka, it's a done deal, he gives her all the gold, the silver, etc. And then he goes back to the home of Rivka, he meets Lavan, the Suel, and all of the Rivka's family. Right? And he tells him the story of what happened. In the middle of him telling him the story of what happened, he says, Ba'ava yom ela'ayin, I came today to the spring, etc. So Rashi says, what do we learn from the fact that he says, Va'avo hayom el ayin? This is Pasuk Membeis. Rashi says, Hayom yatzati v'hayom bati. Today I left, and today I also arrived. Meaning he had a kfitza tadera. The road, God did a miracle for him, and he did it so that, you know, like it's like those... You walk out one door and suddenly, boom, you're exactly where you have to be. You walk that, and before you knew it, it was there. Even though normally the trip takes 3, 4, 5 days a week, he got there that same day. He never says it, he just tends to it. And then Rashi says, Amar Rabbi Acha Yafas Sichadin Shel Avdei Avos Mitoratan Shel Banim. The conversations of the Avadim of the Avos is even more significant than a lot of mitzvahs. Right? Because a lot of mitzvahs are not explicitly written in the Torah, they're just hinted to. Right? We don't waste ink, quote unquote, on certain mitzvahs. But over here, the story of Eliezer takes up a very, very large parak. Parak of Dalet is 66 psukim, 67 psukim, and of that, you know, he appears in the first 60. No, even 61. Yeah, 61 psukim. So, question is, why does Rashi say that here? That the parsha of Eliezer is so significant. And what is so significant? What is so nice to learn from Eliezer? Why didn't you put it at the beginning when Eliezer starts to speak? Or when Eliezer, like, when Avram sends him? Or why didn't you put it at the end as a summary when he comes back? Why in the middle? So it has to be that Rashi thought that there's something about this pasuk, pasuk Yud Gimel, is the pasuk, not Yud Gimel, Membeis, pasuk Membeis is the pasuk that is the nicest of the Sikha. That is, this pasuk is what we have to learn from. This is where the conversation piece that's important for us to learn. And what is the conversation that's important to us to learn? What's important for us to learn is actually what's not written here, says Rav Shimon Schwab. All it says over here is that I came today to the spring. Chazal said, what does that mean? Today I left and today I came. But he never told him that. All he said was, I came today. He was modest and humble. He did not want to cast to the world, to broadcast to the world, by the way, this is what happens when I take the road. I left and I arrived. Right? This is what happens when I take the court. I just, you know, I dunk over all of my opponents. This is what happens when I do a job. It gets done. You know, that type of attitude, that kind of pride, and that kind of show off and hot dogging is, it causes gaiva, and it's low latiferet. It is not glorified in any way. It does not make you any better. In fact, it only compromises your greatness. Part of being great is to be humble about it and to not get excited about it too much, to just do it in a nice, tenua, quiet manner. Okay? We'll stop here. Next week, Parshas Toldos.